So this is, so these are examples of topological field theories which are defined in any dimension, and they somehow over the years have turned out to just be a really nice toy model for axiomatic approaches to quantum field theory. In particular, the one of topological field theories, and somehow many structures people like to study, one can study in these examples. And the other thing, and also why they were introduced in the beginning, in the paper by Dargrove and Witten, it's somehow they encode the type of gauge theory which is not perturbative. So right, usually if you have a gauge theory, like Young-Mills theory, there's a lot of perturbation theory, but then there might be some non-perturbative effects or things coming from the global structure of the gauge group and not just the Lie algebra. In Dargrove-Witten theory, somehow, is the main example of what type of things can happen. So throughout the section, we fix some finite group. So we fix some finite group G, just means it has finitely many elements. And then in particular, it's a zero-dimensional Lie group. So you can, so this has like a few direct consequences. One is, so it's a zero-dimensional Lie group, so the Lie algebra G corresponding to this finite group is just zero. And then this implies in particular that all G bundles carry a unique flat connection. So in cases where we want to do gauge theory, usually we sum over connections on a principal bundle. And in this case, any principal bundle has already a unique connection, so there's nothing to integrate or sum over, but then we only need to sum over the different topology types of principal bundles. And so, and what we want to compute is like this partition function, which on an n-dimensional manifold should be something like a path integral over G bundles on M modulo gauge transformations. And then you want to integrate E to the power of I and then some action S. And for now and until probably the end of the lecture, we just assume S equals zero. So we want to, this means that the whole thing is one. So we just want to integrate the constant function one over the space. Okay, what was I saying? But now, so what's the point of Dargrove-Witten theory is that this space essentially consists of finitely many points. So the integral just becomes a sum and it's well defined. So this is one of the few examples where it's easy to define a path integral. And then we will use that to actually write down something satisfying the axiomatic of topological quantum field theories we've been studying so far in any dimension. And then, as I said, at the end, I will mention what one can do if S is, how one can set S non-zero. Okay. But so what we will spend most of today about is just like setting up this integration theory over these type of things. And first of all, we should really make clear what the thing we integrate over is. Okay. That's the first definition. So we fix some manifold. And it's always n-dimensional. And it's always going to be compact and oriented, but for now let's just fix the manifold. And then we define, where am I? Okay, and then we define this thing, bun, so the groupoid of G bundles on M Ist so. Good point. With so this has objects principle G bundles on M and morphisms gauge transformations. And they are always invertible. Is it clear what a principal G bundle is, or should I briefly recall that? Yes, no, maybe.
Sure.
So I should recall, or so it's clear.
I'd be happy if you recall it.
Okay. Okay, now I need to see if I manage to, but so what it is, so it's another manifold P, which has an is equipped with an action of G, and so this action is required to be transitive. No, it's not. It's required to be free, meaning that it has no fixed points. And then since G is finite, we have P mod G, which is a quotient, and we have the projection mapped to P mod G. And we want this to be M. Or we want an identification to M. So it's a, somehow it's a space with a free G action so that the quotient gives us the fixed manifold M we have. And yeah, so this is probably the easiest way of saying what it means. And somehow, well, how you should think about it, we have M down here. And then up here we have some discrete space of fibers over it, and G acts on these on the fiber. So if I'm over a point in M, G acts transitively on the fiber. So it's, I don't know, G acts somehow on the fiber here. Let's maybe do an example. So I can look at S1. And now I can act. So I think of this as the integers, real numbers modulo integers. And I have an action of Z2 on this, which acts by sending, so the action sends some integer off to x plus 1/2. This is a free, wait, yep, this is a free entry. This is a free action, so I can look at S modulo Z2, and this is again S1. So as a bundle, it's somehow it's a double cover of S1 by itself. So let me try to draw this. Okay, let me not try to draw this. Yeah, but it's right, and then here we go back and this, okay. I mean, you might get the picture. No, I'm not even sure if it's a good picture, but it's a double cover of S1 by itself, and this would be a principal Z2 bundle. And what does it mean to have a unique connection? A connection is something which allows you to lift a path on the base to a path in the fiber if you fix the start point. And since this is discrete, if I have a path down here, there's like a if I fix the start point, there's a unique lift. Okay. This was, yeah. Hope that somehow explains a bit of what's going on. And then you also, what's the gauge transformation? So if I have a principal bundle P over M, and I have another principal bundle P prime over M, a gauge transformation is a map up here so that this diagram commutes. So it's a map between the fibers, which furthermore is equivariant for the action of G. So if I act on a point G, P within group element G, I want this to be just the point, and then I act with G in, on P prime. And it's an easy thing, or it's a standard thing to show that all these things are invertible, making this actually a groupoid and not a category. Okay. And in a moment, we will also give a different description of this groupoid in more topological terms. First, I mean, so far, there might be infinitely many, right? I mean, there might be a bunch of these covers, and the next thing we want to argue is that they are only finitely many. So, at least for M compact. For this, questions, by the way, about what happened so far? If not, so the goal, the first goal is to just give an equivalent description of the groupoid in terms of something which might be easier to understand topologically, and which we can use to make some statements about what type of properties this has. And I mean, if you've seen something like Schoen-Simon theory, you have might seen the statement that flat bundles can be described by their holonomy, and that's what we're going to recover. So same as before. Now, what we define is what's called the fundamental groupoid. Right, of M. And we write pi 1 M for this. And this is somehow a version of the fundamental group, but parameterized over the whole space. So the objects are points M and M. So an object in this groupoid is just a point of M, and a morphism is a homotopy class of paths from M to M prime. So a morphism gamma from, if I have 2 points, I have a point M of some other point M prime, and then a morphism is just some path in M which starts at M and ends at M prime, and I take these things up to homotopy, meaning I identify two paths which differ by a slight deformation. So this path would be the same as like the one where I deform this a bit. Okay. And then composition. It's just a composition of paths. So so if I have a path from M to M prime, and I have some other path from M prime to M double prime, then I can consider this whole composition as a path. And this taking things up to homotopy exactly ensures that this composition actually becomes associative. And now, just a small observation one can make is for, so if M is connected, then for M connected, this large pi 1 of M is actually equivalent to the category with just one object and automorphisms, the fundamental group of M at any point M in M. And so this is an equivalent of categories. And why is this true? I mean, we can just look at the map from pi 1 mm to this fundamental groupoid in M, which then, so this, recall this category only has one object, and then this group as automorphisms. So this one object we just send to M. And then an automorphism is a loop, gamma from M to M, And this can be just mapped to gamma. And I mean, it's easy to see that this is an equivalence, right? Recall that to see that something is an equivalence, we just need to see it's essentially surjective. Meaning if I have an object in here, it's isomorphic to the image of this functor. But since M is connected, I also know it's path connected. So as soon as I have a point in here, there's at least one path to this fixed M. And then fully faithful, I mean, the morphisms are just exactly the same. So it's definitely a bijection on those. Okay. And now why? The reason I introduce these things is just that one can describe principal bundles using these type of topological gadgets for finite groups. This is the next proposition. And it states two things. First is like if I look at G bundles on a disjoint union of manifolds, then this is just the Cartesian product of the groupoid of G bundles. Okay. And the other statement is that G bundles on M are actually equivalent as a category to functors from pi 1 M into BG. And BG here is a category with one object and G as automorphisms. And one of the first things we did when we introduced categories is to compute these type of things. And this is the same as so if M is connected, then this is the same as maps from pi 1 of M. So this is now the fundamental group and its group homomorphisms from here to G. And then morphisms act by conjugation. So we will introduce this notation. So this means an object in this groupoid is just a group homomorphism from pi 1 of M to G. This is just the holonomy of the principal bundle around the loop. And then the more gauge transformations act by G. Okay, and so there's a proof of this statement in the notes, but I will skip it just because I hope to finish the discussion of Diagraph-Witten theories today. But the idea is that this equivalence sends a principal bundle to the map which computes the holonomy. So it's and the holonomy is something like parallel transport around a loop. Questions? Okay. If not. So there's one consequence of this which we will use, which is it just says if M is compact, then band G on M has finite number of objects up to isomorphisms. So this statement says that if I look at the, if I count how many non-isomorphic objects or G bundles I have on M, there are only finitely many. And this allows us to, in the end, perform a sum over those. And this is essentially just a consequence of the previous statement. So first of all, using this equivalence here, we can restrict ourselves to connected M. Because if M is a disjoint union of its connected components, right, if all the connected components have finitely many elements up to isomorphisms, this will also be true here. So we can restrict to connected M. And then the second statement says that there are at most as many elements as there are maps from pi 1 M to G. So, and then because M is compact, one consequence is that pi 1 of M, so if I look at the fundamental group, this is finitely generated. Meaning that there exists a set of generators, a finite set of generators. And then if I look at group homomorphisms out of a finitely generated group, they are most finitely many because they are already fixed by saying what happens on the generators. This shows they are like they are only finitely many group homomorphisms. From pi 1 of m to g. And then this shows because it's equivalent to a groupoid where these things are the object, so there are only finitely many objects. And this is essentially what allows us to just sum over the groupoid of G bundles. And at this point, we are already able to write down the partition function for Dyckerf-Witten theory. We will do the state space and then the linear maps for Bordisms a bit later, but we can already anticipate the we can already anticipate the form of the partition function, which on a manifold M is just and let's say M is connected, then we just sum over maps from pi 1 of m to g, right? We call that the action we summed is just 1. And then we divide out the order of the gauge group. So we take this whole thing and multiply it with 1 over g. And this is exactly what the partition function of Dyckerf-Witten theory is going to be. So just the sum over maps from pi 1 of m to g, and then we just sum 1 and divide by the size of the gauge group. Okay, and later we might also discuss situations where we allow here to sum things which are not just one. Okay. And now what we would like to say on a manifold sigma, what the state space is, we want to say something like functions from 1G on sigma to C. Right? And we might think of this as something like square integrable functions with values in C. But now the slight problem is that this thing is a groupoid and this is just a vector space, so we should define what we mean by a function on a groupoid with values in a vector space. So that's the next definition. So at the moment, this is all in quotation marks. But we will make this precise now. This is what we want to do. So we just fix any groupoid and then a function on G which now is allowed to take values in any vector space. So in a vector space V, this is a linear map, not a linear map, it's just a map of sets from the objects in G to V. So far, nothing new and or nothing surprising. And the condition is that f of x equals f of y if x and y are isomorphic. So the map on here would be a map on G bundles, which is assigns the same thing to isomorphic G bundles. Or in general, just if I have x and y and there's an isomorphism between x and y, then the function is required to be the same. Okay. Good. So I just do some examples. So if I look at a map from pi 1 m to c, this is the same as a locally constant. Function on M, or it's the same as just a map of from pi 0 M to C, right? Because imagine our manifold M looks a bit like this, and then I have for so then pi 1 of M has for every point in M I have an object, so I have these are all my objects, so the objects over here, they will be sent to some number lambda, the objects over here to some other number lambda prime. But then if I have two objects in the same connected component, there's a path between them. So in particular, they are isomorphic in pi 1 of m, so they need to be sent to the same object. And then the other example, which will be relevant later, is just so the first example, the second example is just we fix some set with G action, so I have this X and G X on it, then we can define this groupoid called X /G. And this has objects, are just the X, the elements of the set X, and morphisms. So I have a morphism. Morphisms are given by pairs G and X, and this is a morphism from X to X acted on with G. Okay, and sometimes. You might call, sometimes this category is called the homotopy quotient for, right? Somehow instead of just taking the quotient of X by the action of G, you glue in morphisms between X and G acts on X. So you take a quotient, but you take it in a slightly softer way, and then a function. So if I look at a function on this groupoid to G, not to G, to let to C, then this is the same as a proper function on the set, which is now the real quotient. So this is just, we'll write this. Yeah. Also sometimes written xg. So these are really just the orbits of the g action on x. Yeah, in this sense, functions on this homotopy quotient are just ordinary functions on the quotient. Okay. And now with this definition, like the thing I put in quotation marks here holds. And then there's also a way of equipping it with a Hilbert space structure coming from an L2 type pairing. Okay. So and now, I mean, I already said that we can write down these type of sums, but we want to have a notion of integrating over a groupoid, which somehow behaves well with the concept of category theory. So in particular, if I have two groupoids which are equivalent, I want the integration over those to give me the same answer. And and the important part to write down the integration there is that we had a sum. So we had finitely many objects and we can sum over them. And we just abstract this into a definition of groupoids over which we can sum. So definition, so a groupoid G is what one calls essentially finite if, and there are two conditions, all automorphism groups are finite. So this means just for all G in G, the endomorphisms of G have a finite number of elements. And then the other condition is G has finitely many objects up to isomorphism. And then we just introduce a notation, which is pi zero of G. This is just, these are just the isomorphism classes of objects. And now, these type of groupoids we can integrate over by summing. Okay. Questions up to now? Okay. Now. The next thing is just to define this integration a bit more concrete. So we start with G, which is essentially finite, and a map F from G to some vector space V. And then we define the integral of G in G over F of G, just to be, so I sum over the isomorphism classes of objects. And then I take F of G. So this is well defined by just picking any representative in the isomorphism class, and I divide by the automorphisms of. So G is an object in G, so there's an automorphism group which is finite, so I can divide by this. And somehow the assumptions are exactly so that these things are finite, so I can divide by them. And then the sum is also finite, so it will converge without any problems. So this is the integration, and then one other thing we define is just the groupoid cardinality. T, this is something like the size of G, and we just define it to be the integral of 1 over G. So this is some over the isomorphism classes, and then 1 divided by the automorphisms of G. Okay, now there are, I mean, this definition might seem a bit ad hoc, but especially if you know gauge theories or something like this, it should make sense, right? Somehow, if you do a path integral in a gauge theory, you sum over all bundles with connection, but then you overcount things which are the same. So you overcount things which differ by a gauge symmetry, and then you divide by the size of gauge symmetry. And you do the same here. You sum over objects, and then you divide out how much you overcount them by dividing out the size of the gauge group. And this is somehow this expression. It's also natural from the perspective of categories. So one nice feature is that this is invariant under equivalences. So if you have two equivalent groupoids, these integrations will agree. And then it's somehow the unique thing which has this property, behaves well with products and well with coverings. So there's not much of an option. If you want to have an integration theory, this is essentially the only thing you can do. So let's do some examples. Actually, you should also think of them as an exercise. And so if I compute the groupoid cardinality of this quotient groupoid we introduced somewhere, then this is just the size of X divided by the size of G. And this is not completely obvious from the definition over there. I mean, this is essentially what, if you had some course on group theory, this is like the orbit stabilizer theorem, what goes into proving this. And then the other important example is G bundles on M. This is also a groupoid. And then let's say M is connected again. Then we have seen this is the same as maps from the fundamental group of M to G, modulo gauge, modulo conjugation action by G. And then using this condition, we see it's actually the same as the partition function of Dyckhoff-Witten theory on M. So Dyckhoff-Witten theory is exactly the integral. Let me just write this out. This is like integral over G bundles on M of the constant function 1. And this was because we set our action to be 0. There's just one interesting comment one can make. This sometimes even converges when G is not not essentially finite. So these type of sums sometimes converge even in more general settings. So for example, if I put in here the groupoid of finite sets and bijections, then the size of automorphisms is n factorial. So this sum would be exactly Euler's number. So there might be things where these type of things work out more generally, but somehow, if it's essentially finite, somehow you know it always converges.
Okay. Right, Lucas. So by zero of G is a set of isomorphism classes in the groupoid?
Yes.
It seems like we're...
And then you pick a representative, right? You pick some representative of the isomorphism class. And the point is that this doesn't depend on the representative.
Okay, so this sum actually goes over the representatives, not the classes.
I mean, the sum goes over the classes. And for every class, you pick an arbitrary representative and write down this expression, but it will not depend on the representative.
I see.
I mean, it might be better like...
I see.
Yeah. You just pick your favorite one and somehow.
So you would not be the number of classes.
It's not what?
So this sum is all not to be the number of classes, right? Because it depends like one over the size of the
class. Exactly.
Yeah.
But so yeah, maybe another thing, right? An example for a groupoid is a set. Every set is a groupoid, right? And then the groupoid cardinality of a set is just the cardinality of the set. Because the isomorphism class are exactly the points in the set, and there are no automorphisms, so you would just sum one over the size of a set. Okay, this is not. Yeah. Okay. And we are nearly at the point where we can define diagraph Witten theory on or on bodisms. There's just one small thing we need. So let me maybe briefly say of where we, what we want to do. So if we have some bodism M, which goes from sigma to sigma prime. So the idea is really the discussion we had in the first lecture by writing down formal properties of a path integral to make them precise, because in this simple toy model, we have an actual path integral. So we just take the formulas which didn't make sense in the first lecture and now spell them out in this setting, but then be careful about the fact that this is a group ord. So we have G bundles on M. We have a restriction to sigma 1. And I have a restriction to things on sigma 2. And let me maybe jump a bit ahead and write down the formula for diagraph Witten theory on M. And then we will see that there's one thing in there we need to explain in slightly more detail. So this is a map from diagraph Witten theory on sigma 1 to the value on sigma 2, right? And these things, this is functions on G bundles on sigma 1 with values in C, and this is functions on G bundles on sigma 2 with values in C. So I want to define a map here. So what I do is I start with a function f, which as an input takes some G bundle on sigma 1 and gives me a complex number back. And now I need to map this to another function, which as an input takes some G bundle on sigma 2 and then maps it to a number. And what is this number? It's like we integrate over we integrate over G bundles on M, which restrict to P sigma 2. So I take this R2 minus 1. So I look at the preimage of this restriction of P sigma 2, and then I integrate F of R1. So I take things in here, and this is what, so there's some H, which I will come back to in a second. I should say this now, like what do, the thing which is unclear yet is what does this preimage mean? Right, because principal bundles are only well defined up to gauge transform, or where they are gauge transformations. So maybe I have a principal bundle on M, which restricts to something isomorphic to the bundle we started with, and then maybe we want still want to integrate over this, or we want somehow also, right? We also want a definition which works well with equivalences. So I might want to, instead of using the geometric definition of G bundles, use this more topological one, and then to make this work, one needs to take these isomorphisms into account, and this is what this type of thing will do, which I will explain next. But then this formula works, so I just integrate over this preimage of bundles on M, and I evaluate their restriction to sigma 1, and I evaluate F on this. And this is exactly what we wrote down in the first lecture for the past integral.
I'm slightly confused, but is it true that like we're trying to build like a functor as a QFT?
Yeah.
And we build it in a way that we sort of take a bodism category, then we throw it in this, I don't know, category where objects are as bundles and morphisms are such correspondences.
Yes.
And then we throw it in
And then we do some linearization. This is exactly what happens. I mean, so I'm going to do a bit of a shortcut just because I want to do everything in one lecture. But usually the better way of defining is there's a map from board N, then there's a map to spans. So these type of things are called spans. Right? It's like an object map here, so this is a span. And then it's a span in groupoids. And then they are essentially finite. And then there's a functor here, which goes to vector spaces. And this is like a linearization. Linearization. Or maybe you call this a quantization. And what it does on the object, it takes functions, and then to a span, what it assigns it somehow. It takes a function here, pulls it back to a function here, and then pushes it forward via an integration over three images. So this is just the expression here. But actually, both of these things are symmetric monoidal on their own. And then the composition will be something symmetric monoidal. Okay. So, let me stress again, the thing which is not defined yet and which we define next is like, what is this groupoid we integrate over? And the reason for that is really that if there are isomorphisms in the game, you need to be slightly careful on what you mean by taking a preimage. Right, because I mean, it might be that I have two points which are isomorphic, and then I have a functor from something, but it only hits this one point. And then I look at the preimage of this. This you might think is empty, but then these two points you should think of as the same. So all these things should still be in the preimage. And there's just a way of fixing this. I mean, so there's a definition, which is. So we fix some functor between groupoids, be a functor. And G2 is just some element in the second groupoid. Then, so this thing is sometimes called the homotopy fiber of G2. And this is the groupoid itself. It's the groupoid. Groupoid with. So now I will tell you what are the objects and what are the morphisms. So the objects, they are given by a pair. It's like G1 in G1 and a map H, which goes from lambda G1 to G2. So an object is like an object of G1 together with a specified isomorphism between lambda applied to G1 to G2. So it's a preimage, like it's something in the other thing and an isomorphism to the thing we want it to be a preimage of. And then a morphism is a map, let's say. So I want to say what is a morphism from G1, H 2g1 prime, comma h prime, and this is a morphism f from g1 to g1 prime in g1, but then I want it to be compatible with the h's. So there's a condition such that, so I do lambda of g1, I can apply lambda to h, and then both of them are isomorphic to g2, and then I want this diagram, this is h, this is h prime, I can do lambda of f, and then I want this diagram to commute. Okay, and this is what defines the groupoid we integrate over here. Okay. Did this. So now I can. So note that this here, now this definition, I explained all the terms in it. So this now at least defines a defines a thing you might want to check if it's a topological quantum field theory or not. So if it's a symmetric monoidal functor out of the Bordesen category, and this is what we are going to do, at least partially. So the theorem is this assignment, so meaning the thing up there. And then extends to a TQ of T, which is a symmetric monoidal functor from the Bordesen category in n dimensions to vector spaces. Okay. Right, and this is our first example of a field theory which works in any, in an arbitrary dimension. Okay, before we can prove this, we will need one property about this compatibility between the homotopy fiber and groupoid cardinality or integration. So we will use the following lemma, which says if I, so I have some lambda, which goes, it's a functor from g1 to g2, and I have a function f, which goes from g1 to some vector space v. And now I want to, and the statement is, I can integrate f over g1. And this is the same, so this is now the statement which the lemma contains is the same as integrating over g2. And then what I integrate is I take the pre-image of lambda at g2, and I integrate, so points in here are elements of the form g1 and h, and I do this integral of f of g1. So what it says somehow is I have some groupoid, this is g1, and I have a map f to, let's say, c, and then I have some other groupoid g2 down here, and I have this map lambda here. And So instead of integrating over G1 at once, I somehow integrate over G2, and then I do an integral over the fibers. Right. So in particular, you could apply this to a product. And then if you have a product, you can somehow integrate over the product, or you can have two integrals over the individual pieces of a product. So this is something like Fubini's theorem, or I mean, here it's even more general. But it splits the integral over G1 up in an integral over element in G2 and then the fibers. And also making these things work really requires on the precise definition. Okay, and...
Sorry, what's G2, G2?
What?
The first integral.
Ah, this is... Sorry. But I integrate over G2. So the G2 is a groupoid, and then the small g2 is an object. Yeah, yeah. And then I take the preimage of lambda of this element, and then I evaluate f on the element in the preimage. I mean, one thing to highlight here is, where is this? Here. So one thing to highlight here is the automorphisms in the somatopy fiber, they are different from the automorphisms in G1, right? Because there's this extra condition that it commutes with the H's. So for example, if I look at, I don't know, G bundled on sigma and restricted to the boundary, and M is connected, I mean here, so if M is connected and this is non-empty, then this fiber will have no automorphism. So there's just a finite sum. And these type of things are somehow set up exactly so that this theorem works. Okay. And the proof is an exercise. I mean, you essentially write out the definition of this, and you write out the definition of the thing on the other side. And then you see that they agree. There's one helpful thing, right? This integral is linear in F. So if I have the sum of two functions, it will be its sum. And then you see that it's enough to check this for functions which are only concentrated on one connected component. Because you can write any function as a sum of the functions on the component, and then it's essentially just, I think again, orbit stabilizer. Okay. And we have a bit of time, okay.
Does the class of G1H depend on H, or like all of the different H's go in the same class?
No, there will be different H's which might be in a different class. Right, so an easy example is, right, we can look at the map format point to BG. Mm-hmm. Right, so what's the fiber of this map? Like, I mean, here I only have the baseband, so let's call this lambda. Then what is lambda inverse of the base point in BG? This is just a set, and it's a set of G, right? Because it's like a something in here. There's only a point here. And then I need to give an isomorphism from a point to a point. So this is this G. And then I need some things which commute, but because G is a group, there are no morphisms. So it really depends on this G, and this also means that sometimes you might count things more often than you think. And this is somehow, miraculously, it's defined so that this actually becomes a functor. I mean, yeah. Okay. So what we will do in the last half hour is just sketch the proof of this theorem, so of this statement, and then I will mention some extensions usually considered in the literature. So this is somehow the easiest example of a Diagraph-Witten theory. And we will, yeah, and there are more complicated things people consider nowadays. So we'll just briefly mention what are the other things one can do. And I mean, yeah, the other reason is I somehow decided to compress a lot of the theory, so I didn't split it into this two-step procedure and the linearization procedure. Which makes the lecture a bit faster, but the proof will be now a bit, like somehow everything you could do in a lot of smaller steps, we will now do in one step. So the proof is going to be a bit messy and convoluted. And yeah, maybe you don't, this is like not something which is like so important to understand. I think more important is just the statement that this works. And then maybe doing some example computations. Yeah, there's just a warning that this proof is going to get a bit messy at some point. Yeah, and I will also probably only sketch some steps, and then all the details are in the notes. So, right. The first thing is to recall that we define topological field theories as symmetric monoidal functors. A symmetric monoidal functor is more than just the value on objects and morphisms. It's also coherence isomorphisms, which encode compatibility with the monoidal structure. So if you remember, we called them epsilon and mu. And epsilon is supposed to be a map from the unit in vector spaces, which are the complex numbers, to the value of the field theory on the monoidal unit in borderisms, which was the empty set. So and this is functions on the groupoid of principal bundles on the empty set. This is just a point to see. So I have a complex number, and I want to give an isomorphism to functions on a point. And this is just, I mean, I send the complex number lambda, I send to the function which sends the point. And this is clearly an isomorphism. And then the other piece of data we need to specify is a map from the tensor product of the vector spaces assigned to two different manifolds to the vector space assigned to the disjoint union. Okay. And now this is just functions on G bundles on the disjoint union. But we had this proposition that this is the same as functions on the product. I mean, this is, right, this is equivalent to the product of these groupoids, and then functions on equivalent groupoids are isomorphic. So what we do is we take a function here and some function. So this is a function for a principal bundle here, principal bundle there, and we would just map it to the function, which is somehow I take my principal bundle, I restrict it to sigma, and then I multiply with g, which takes in the same principal bundle and restricts it to sigma prime. And this is an isomorphism because bundles on here are the same as bundles on the product. Okay. Questions? Okay. And now there's only one thing left. I mean, and now one should start checking that these things satisfy the pentagon equation, the hexagon equations and the equations we had involving these type of things. Oh no, there are some equations they need to satisfy. But they are reasonably straightforward to check from the definition. So the thing which is really left to show is that if I have two borderisms, M prime and M, which are composable, then this composition corresponds to the gluing of borderisms. Okay. And this is what we will do. Draw the type of picture we have G bundles on M. We have G bundles on sigma 1. G bundles on sigma 2. G bundles on M prime. G bundles on sigma C. And then here, restriction maps prime, and I have restriction maps for the original manifold. Okay. And now what we do is we just spell out both sides of this equation and try to show that they are the same. So let us start with spelling out this side. So this is going to be So it's a principal bundle on M prime and some H, which is in the fiber of R3 for P sigma 3. And then I apply Diagram-Witten theory on M. So I want to start with evaluating this whole thing on an element in the vector space, so some function f. And then I evaluate this thing on F. I think I already messed something up in my notes, which is not good. So we want to do this. So we do Z of M, which is an integral over, okay, let's just do it, not trust the notes. Okay, so I do Z of M prime, which is an integral over pre-images in here. This is good. And then then I do R2 prime of P of M prime and evaluate whatever this function is on it. So now I just wrote out what Z of M prime is. Okay. And now the next step is to also write Z of M out as an integral. So we will get a larger integral. And I mean, this should remind you of the things we did in the first lecture. So now, hopefully this is an integral. So I think I leave the integral I had before. So nothing, not much happened so far. And then we will get a new integral, which spells out now what Z of M is. So this is an integral over M bundle, P bundle, or G bundles on M, which live in R2, in the fiber of the restriction to sigma 2 of the restriction to sigma 2, but prime of Pm prime. So this is the first integral runs over is now the argument of the second integrand. And then we do f of restriction to 1 Pm. And I think, okay. And we will leave it at that for a moment. So let's say this is star. Okay. And we want to compare this to the other composition. So we want to compare this to Z M prime composed with M, also evaluated on the function F. And this is the function now which is like an integral, but now over R3 for the composed manifold. And maybe I draw a picture here. So this might be M. And then this is M prime. And the composed manifold is whatever we get if we glue these things together. And then we can also, the composed manifold also has a restriction to the boundary. And that's what I denote by restriction to M3, MM prime. Oh, no. Right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So I restrict to sigma 3, but I do this for M composed with M prime composed with M. And then in here, so this is again the preimage of some bundle on sigma 3. In here, I have a principal bundle on the composition. So I have something on a principal bundle on the glued thing, and I have some H. And what I want to integrate is just F applied to the restriction of this principal bundle to sigma 1. Okay. So I want to compare this integral with the integral over here. And I mean, the integrand is already close, right? It's F something restricted to sigma 1. It's just we restrict different things. Okay. And now what we use is exactly the lemma we had before. So we use the following. So what we want to show is that star is equal to double star. And for this, we just look at the following thing. I can look at the integrand here, which is M prime composed with M. Pre-image of sigma 3. Oh. But I integrate over this, and now I want to somehow rewrite this integral as something which looks like the expression we have over there. So we apply some, we can define a functor f from here to R3 prime inverse P sigma 3, right? So this is one of the integrals we have here, namely the first one. That's what the first one runs over. Which does what it does. It takes a pair of a bundle on M composed with M prime and H to just the bundle, which is, and now I restrict this to M prime. And this is the principal bundle on this glued manifold, and I can restrict it to M prime. And then H can stay the same because it's just something which happens, right? It's just some isomorphism about the restriction over here. So H stays the same. And this is now what we want to apply, this type of statement to the functor f, to rewrite one of the integrals as the other one. Okay. So We already know, because there's a functor, we can apply this integration result. So we already know it's like the integral up there will be an integral over the thing on the right, and then the homotopy fiber of whatever f is. So the only thing which is left to show is that the homotopy fiber of f is actually the thing we have over there. So we have this. PM. And this has a map into F inverse of any of this given pair of an M prime and some H. Okay, what this does, so in here I have a principal bundle on M, and then some gauge transformation from this thing restricted to sigma 3, to sigma 2. I have a gauge transformation, this thing to PM prime restricted to. So what this says, it's like it's a bundle on M. Wait, it's a bundle on M prime, sorry. This is no, this has a prime, sorry. So it's a bundle on M together with an isomorphism of its restriction to sigma 2 to the restriction of this other bundle to sigma 2. So they are isomorphic at their intersection, which means I can glue them together. So I send this just to the pair PM, and then I glue them together using this H tilde P. M prime, and then I use H. Right, H is information which comes with the PM prime. So I can write this thing down as a functor. And now what's left to show is, we call it maybe call this omega. So the only thing which is left to show is omega. So it's left to show that omega is an equivalence. And given that there are only 10 minutes, and I'm already confused and things can only get more confusing, I will leave this as an exercise, or it's also there is a version of it in the notes. So the C notes. But this is now just a basic statement in differential geometry or topology, which is about principal bundles or manifolds and how they glue. Okay. And I mean, what somehow implicitly we use is if I look at G bundles on the composition, this is the same as taking G bundles on M prime and G bundles on M, and then we take their product, but we only take the products which agree on sigma 2, and we do this in an appropriate way using keeping track of gauge transformation. So this is somehow what makes the whole construction work. Okay. Good, and then, I mean, there are two natural exercises one should do now after having the theory in any dimension and us previously studying one and two dimensional theories. The exercise which we would do if there's more time is just like what is, and then the first question is like, the vector space for 1D, like I've written theory. Okay, this should be easy. And then what should be harder is what is the commutative Frobenius algebra for 2D dynamical latency. So one easy, one hard exercise. Okay. Questions about the proof?
I mean, so what you went through was about like the second part, which is like the integral transformer, and what is left is like the sort of simple part about morphisms in this category that I sort of can like go up and get the correspondence between those two, right?
I mean, as I said, if we would have had more time, we would have shown that here I have bundles on these things, right? I have these type of restrictions. I have these restrictions. And then what we do is we do a pull, we do a push, we do another pull, we do another push. And we just show that here, this that what's called a back something condition is that if I push and pull, this is the same as pulling and pushing. So, and then showing this somehow would also show the equation. We just showed this by hand. And so this is also, and this is just, should be a pullback square. This is what the condition over there says somehow. I mean, in the end, right, you just need, I mean, there are probably also other ways of just directly computing that these things compose. Right, you might be able to rewrite these things using fundamental groups, and then it's just like something like Seifert van Kampen or something like that. Okay. More questions? If not, let me.
When we say gate transformation,
yes.
Is it defined globally or it doesn't have to be defined?
It's defined globally.
Okay.
Not. Yeah. Gate transformations are.
So it's like an isomorphism of the bundles?
It's an isomorphism of principal bundles, yes. Let me just conclude with an outlook of things one can do and people do nowadays. I mean, the easiest thing is, so there's now BG, which we might, we should write as this. So it's a realization of this category BG we had. But this is the classifying space for G. This is just some topological space one can associate to the group G. And we can look at cochains on the space with values in the real numbers modulo integers. And we call these things omega. And then the other important thing about the classifying space is just principal bundles on M are the same as maps from M to this classifying space. And I mean, if you have seen adjunctions before, you see that this condition here, what you want is that the classifying space is adjoined to the fundamental groupoid. Because we know principal bundles are maps from the fundamental groupoid into this category BG, so this thing should be right adjoined to the fundamental groupoid. So this is like what the space is, but it's not so important. The important thing is that we can use this co-cycle omega as an action functional for Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. So now we can define Dijkgraaf-Witten theory twisted by omega as an integral over G bundles on M. And a G bundle, right, is characterized by such a map. And what I can integrate is the exponential of 2 pi I. And then I take this map, I pull back omega. So omega is an n-code chain on the space. So it's an n-code chain on M, meaning that I can integrate it over M. And then I take this exponential. And this is now a function on the groupoid of G bundles, which one can use as a partition function. So this depends on this cocycle. And then it's just, let me make a warning. So if I look at the state space on some surface sigma, for the twisted version, this is not the same as the state space for the untwisted version. And I mean, right, you can compute the dimension of the space by just computing the partition function on the sigma times S1. And already on the torus, you will see that they just have different dimensions. Okay. So this is one generalization one can go into.
So I should think about omega as like a matter, right?
Like a what?
Matter.
No, as an action function.
Right. But like before, I had a sort of.
But you don't.
The action was zero.
Yeah, the action was zero.
Because everything was flat, and as sort of like f mu, but it was zero.
Yes.
And here I added like an interaction with a matter.
No, you're adding a topological term to the action.
Yes.
Right. So I mean, imagine you have G. Right. It's just some Lie group, and assume it's not simply connected. Well, it's not connected, sorry. Then this is something like G0, and then there's some there's some direct product with like some finite group F. Right, and you can always add these topological terms to the action. So you would have like F, which F, and then plus, I mean, or whatever, or Schoen-Simons or whatever. But then you can have a digraph written C. Also, this is, you have like the classical thing, and then you can have a digraph written term for F. Now, these terms, they are sometimes called discrete torsion in some settings. But it's a topological term. It's not, there's no matter which we add, right? The thing we integrate over still stays the same. Okay. And then, so now, here we had BG as a space, and the other generalization, which got was quite popular nowadays, is to replace BG with just the general space X. So it just so BG, we can replace this with X, which is a space. And then there's a condition one needs to ask for these things to work, and this was called pi finite. So this means the fundamental groups or the homotopy groups, topy groups of X, they become zero if for large enough numbers. So only finitely many of them are non-zero, and all of them are finite. So all of them are finite. And then you can define, also for a cocycle on X, you can define a field theory which has partition function on M, just the sum over homotopy classes of maps from M to X. So you sum over these maps from M to X up to homotopy. You again take the exponential of 2 pi I integral of F star omega. So omega is now some class on X, and we integrate this over M. And then now we want to have a similar normalization as for digraph-Witten theory, but now our automorphisms have automorphisms themselves because they're higher than homotopy groups. So the digraph-Witten term would just be pi 1 of the mapping space of maps from M into X at F. So this would be if the space would be G, but now we just somehow we divide it out by automorphisms, but now the automorphisms have automorphisms themselves. So we overcounted the thing we divide out, so we need to multiply it on top. So this is maps from M into X and pi 2 at, so it's mapping space at F, and then this continues. So now I need to divide by pi 3 and then by multiply by pi 4 and so on. And the assumptions make this way defined, so this converges. And then there is a topological field theory corresponding to this pair of X and omega, and this is sometimes called a finite homotopy theory for the space X. And then the last generalization one might consider is instead of summing maps at over maps to X, you might sum over other discrete things. So you can essentially sum over other things which are discrete. And a common example is spin structures. Right, a given manifold only has a finite number of spin structures, so I can sum over them, or maybe I sum over orientations, or something like that. Right, and summing over spin structures is what's sometimes called bosonization, because you start with a theory sensitive to spin structures with fermions, then you sum over them and you get something non-sensitive to spin structures, which is bosonic. Okay, let me stop here.